Hi, I'm Jason Schwimmer, and this is a podcast about my journey to meet seven male strangers who all have one thing in common with me. We all played the voice of DW, the little sister character on the popular kids show, Arthur.
Job. You think it's easy being an accountant when you can't count past 10?
That's me in an episode called Is There a Doctor in the House? An episode where Arthur's parents get sick, and after some trial and error, Arthur and DW learn how to chip in and help out around the house. The episode aired in November 2002. If you're a returning listener, welcome back, and if you're new, well, I'm so glad you're here. In the last episode, I spoke to Deborah Toffin, the casting and voice director for the entire Arthur series. I also talked to the first guy to ever play DW, Michael Callows, which was just awesome for me. Even if you feel like you can just jump on board here with episode 3, since this podcast is all about me finding and interviewing the other guys who played DW, you really shouldn't skip the episode where I talked to the first one, right? It just feels serendipitous that I spoke to him first, and I'd hate for you to miss out. But enough about that. Let's get into what's happened since then. I feature a clip of myself doing the voice of DW in each episode of this podcast, and while I was pulling the clip I used in episode 1 from my favorite Arthur episode, Bleep, I stumbled upon a video by a YouTuber named Scott Kramer. The video is called I Can't Believe PBS Kids Aired This Episode, ... and has over 4 million views. Here's a clip.
Hi everybody, I'm here on the set of The Altos. You know, that TV show about the family life of a gangster?
This is a Sopranos reference, right? Why would I have watched The Sopranos and know what that show is? I'm 7, Arthur. I'm 7!
His video legitimately made me laugh, and I decided that it would be fun to talk to him, so I sent him an email with the subject line, Arthur Video Question. Within a day, I got my response. Oh my goodness, that's incredible. Of course I'd like to be a part of it.
Well, thanks for having me. This is great. Honestly, when you sent me that email, I was very excited. I get a lot of invitations to do stuff like this, and some of them I do and some of them I don't, but this was like an absolute definite no-brainer. Yes, the fact that you were DW and you can talk to like the other DW, I mean, that's legendary. That's gonna be amazing.
Scott focuses on creating videos that analyze pop culture from the 90s and early 2000s, which is why Arthur fits into his wheelhouse so perfectly. I asked him what he remembered about the episode Bleep.
So I saw it on TV and it was just like something that stuck with me, I think for pretty obvious reasons, because
yeah,
it was way different than any other like Arthur episode. It was kind of like almost a little, it wasn't vulgar, but to my brain it was, because I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
And then also, like I said in the video that I made, but my mom actively was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you watching? What is this? And then, you know, since I was doing YouTube, I figured anytime I get an idea that's even remotely interesting to me, I write it down. And that one was like immediately, oh, this is going to be an interesting video idea.
I wonder if maybe you could get into a little bit what you found interesting about the episode beyond the fact that it's about DW swearing.
I think a lot of the time with the stuff that I do, I like to pull nostalgia out because my audience is around my age. So a lot of the things that I experienced growing up pop culture wise and things like that, my audience can relate to a lot of it. So that was a big part of it. Most of the stuff, like I said, that I do is like, I don't know, reality shows, game shows, like movies from when me and my audience would have been growing up. It was just like an entertaining episode. And I think a lot of the time with commentary, some people kind of pull anything and try to react to anything. And you can do that, but if it's going to be like a really entertaining video, I think the video or the thing that you're reacting to has to be entertaining. If the subject matter isn't interesting, then it's harder to make the video interesting. And that was just another reason why, because that episode was so entertaining.
Can you tell me a bit about sort of what your process is in terms of making your videos?
So like the Arthur video is essentially like a reaction or whatever, but it's fully scripted. I've done things like that that aren't scripted at all. And even, you know, recently I've done things like that. And I think the final product is never quite as good as I wish it would have been. I look back when I'm editing and I wish I would have made this joke, or I wish I would have like done this little sketch here, and I didn't because I wasn't thinking of it in the moment. So that's why I like to take, usually it takes me, you know, 3 or 4 days of pre-planning and watching a bunch of like a bunch of footage of whatever I'm talking about, whatever TV shows or game shows, whatever, and scripting it. So I can just get the most out of the video. And I know that viewers don't really, they most of the time don't notice that extra effort that goes in. But I think over time it builds and it builds and it builds. And my back catalog is just a little bit more impressive than it could have been had I just done it unscripted. And that is more for me than it really is for anybody else.
Was the fact that Scott's video went viral random? Or did it have something to do with the hold Arthur still has on so many people's attention? Even though I set out with the simple goal of meeting the other guys who played DW, I'm realizing that there's something deeper going on here. And I think understanding more about why DW matters to people is the key. Like, what is it about DW specifically? Is there anything that stands out to you?
I think she kind of, and I may be wrong, but I think from what I see, she kind of has the same like relatable pessimism that like Squidward has. So like as a kid, I think I used to think of DW as like a twerp. I was like, freaking DW is always causing trouble and being so negative and, you know, telling on people or whatever. And then the older I get, the more I kind of relate with DW. Yeah. And it's the same way with like Squidward on SpongeBob, where it's like when you're a kid, Squidward's the jerk, you know, he's always ruining all the fun. But the older you get, the more you understand where he's coming from.
I've thought a lot about DW and why she matters to a lot of people. Then Scott brought up Squidward. I watched some Squidward compilations online to refamiliarize myself with the character. Then I found this moment from an episode in season 3 of SpongeBob called My Pretty Seahorse.
In case you've forgotten, here's how things work. I order the food, you cook the food, then the customer gets the food. We do that for 40 years, and then we die. Sounds like a pretty good deal to me. What do you say?
That little speech triggered something I didn't consider until now. This podcast marks the apex of an existential crisis I think I've been having since I stopped playing DW on Arthur. When I was the voice of DW, did I peak? Will I ever do anything more meaningful or significant? What a question, right? Well, stick around. I'll get into everything and more after a word from our sponsors. Finding DW is independently produced by me, Jason Schwimmer. If you want to support the show, the best way you can do that is by checking out my Patreon. Supporters like you help me spend more time doing what I love, creating this podcast for you to enjoy. Plus, when you support this podcast, you'll gain access to exclusive bonus podcast episodes that feature full-length interviews with each person who appears on my show. Head to patreon.com/findingdw. That's FINDINGDW. No punctuation. There's also a link in the episode notes. Thank you very much. And now, back to the show. I think this scene with Squidward represents existential ennui. The word ennui is French, and it comes from the 18th century Romantic period, after the French Revolution. People were promised better lives, but young people were let down when they realized their lives hadn't changed all that much. The potential they were promised for awesome opportunities turned out to be a big letdown. People became overwhelmed with a feeling of emptiness, just from the idea of existing without purpose. I think I and others identify with Squidward because all of us are prone to feeling this kind of ennui. Whether you're working or in school, life can sometimes feel defined by dull repetition. We're all prone to feeling like there's no escape from Groundhog Day, because once you get what you want, then what? Is there a higher meaning worth chasing? I started reading a little online and found quotes from the 20th century existential philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. His writing suggests that life's inherent lack of meaning justifies living. Like with this quote, "What is important is not what happens to us, but how we respond to what happens to us." What I took from that is that the only way we can give our lives meaning is to make decisions and take action. And through these decisions and actions, we create who we are. Thinking about Sartre's words gives me comfort because I have felt lost for such a long time. I'm reminded of how Michael, the first guy to play DW, had trouble choosing a major in university, and how he loved to try different activities all the time. He described his career as long and winding. I guess he and I have had zigzagging careers that run parallel to one another. It's crazy how similar our experiences have been, but like Sartre said, things happen. And we are who we are because of what we do with the cards we're dealt. I'm glad I was DW. It was fun, but I didn't have much of a say in the fact that it actually happened. I mean, I was 10. But I didn't have to make a podcast about all of this. This was my choice. I can look at this project and acknowledge my resilience and my ambition. I may have felt lost all these years, but I've been trying to find my way. This podcast isn't a fix to my anxiety, but maybe it's part of the catharsis I was looking for. I decided to learn more about how Arthur was developed and about the writing process for the scripts. So I reached out to screenwriter and creative producer Kathy Waugh. She was one of the first people brought on to develop Arthur for television from the book series. She worked directly with Mark Brown, the author of the Arthur books. Wow, say that 10 times fast. Author of Arthur, author of Arthur, author of Arthur.
Our local coffee shop here, I cannot tell you the cred I had when they were guys behind the counter, they were in like 18, 19, realized I has much, I mean, literally, I couldn't pay for coffee after that. They were so excited.
I asked her about why the writers took swings like the ones they took with episodes like Bleep.
I developed that show. I mean, that was the first thing I did at WGBH. We really got to be experimental with Arthur and kind of a little bit off the wall. And now that just isn't really allowed. And I don't think it was kind of grandfathered in. I didn't write this script, but the idea for it came from something in my past. It was an earlier script, but it was where DW thinks she's going to die because she ate a green potato chip.
She's talking about an episode called The Chips Are Down.
These are my last days of life. I don't want mommy mad at me.
This episode aired in 98. It's a classic.
That had actually happened to me. It wasn't a potato chip, but I ate something I thought was going to die. It was going to kill me. And I worried about it in secret for days and days and days. And I didn't know who to tell and all that sort of stuff. So I think it was even a two-part episode, but it became a chance for for Binky and DW to come together in this sort of like, what would we do if this was our last day on earth? Who would we be? You could kind of talk about things like death and fear and the kind of crazy ideas that kids get. Both Arthur, but DW was a great vehicle for that. She, you know, there just weren't any boundaries in a way. In the way they're, you know, is truly representative of four-year-olds. They just think what they think. They're not, you know, they're not already worried about what people are going to say to them or think about them for their thoughts.
When I talked to Deborah, one of the things that we started talking about is that the writers had a lot of fun writing for DW. I think that must have been the case.
It was the case. And my two favorite characters were DW and Francine. What was interesting was that Arthur had a bit of a Charlie Brown everyman kind of quality to him. He just wasn't as naturally funny or fun to play with as the other characters. And that works because he's the center of this swirling universe. You know, you need one John Krasinski for every, you know, Michael Scott you've got. You got to have somebody saying it was way more fun writing for DW. DW and Francine had range.
How much of those characters were fully fleshed out in the development process?
You know, working with Mark Brown was really a dream. First, DW was really pretty fully formed. I mean, we were able to throw her into all kinds of circumstances, but in his books, she was always doubting, always ragging on Arthur, always disputing whatever he said, always, you know, she just had that lovely theatrical flair that was right there in the book. So she kind of came fully formed. Other characters we definitely developed. I mean, Binky was just a bully. He was just a bully. And we gave him that whole softer side and that artistic side that he worked hard to hide. And early on, we had to, and we met with Mark Brown, and this was another way he was so great to work with, is he was really open to changes within, you know, he didn't want anything too extreme, obviously, but he was open to changes, and he was really open to what the writers did. I can't recall a time, I mean, there might have been, but I can't recall a time where he said, no, the characters wouldn't do this, or no, I don't want to take them there, or no, you know, he was, part of that was finding the right writers for the project. They got the characters and they weren't going to do any harm to them, but he was just also very he really shared his characters with the writers, and that doesn't always happen. But I think that's part of why Arthur was such a huge success, because he let go of the reins a bit and he allowed the writers to have fun, and that brought out the best in all of us. And we brought in bits of our own lives to the table. We brought in literature to the table. You know, only on Arthur could you do, you know, a takeoff on the Odyssey or Waiting for Godot or all the many, many, you know, or Frankenstein, all the many things we had fun playing with. And that's what made it a show that worked over how many seasons. We never got bored.
Do you feel like working for Arthur made you a better writer?
Oh yeah, it made me a writer.
Right. I've always wondered what the writer's room on Arthur was like. What was it like to write an episode? That's when she told me that.
So this is going to break your heart. And it kind of broke my heart. And it still does to this day. There was no writer's room.
No way, really?
No. And this is because we're in Boston. So I have never experienced a writer's room. And that breaks my heart, because like I read books about writer's rooms like crazy, because somehow it seems idyllic to me to be in a room with like-minded people making each other laugh. Like, what could be better?
I agree.
So what we would do is, how it would work is, we would usually gather at least, and we have a different process. We've done a little bit more as we've gone on. We try to meet more often with writers, et cetera. But at the time, I think we had perhaps one writer's meeting where one day, and there's a huge agenda. You've got to get everyone on board the show. They've got to understand what the show is going to be and who's in it and who the characters are. And then you pitch some story ideas and you work them a little bit, but you don't get to really break them down. You don't get to work them very much. One day, maybe 2 days, and that's it.
I wonder if you have any insight into, or if you remember, sorry, what it was like to see Arthur, an episode of Arthur complete for the first time.
Amazing. And here's where I have to give credit to the voices. And now I'm a big, big, big fan of, you know, casting. Whenever you're developing something, casting the voices as soon as you can.
Right.
Because, DW had such a distinct way of talking, but she was a particular, I mean, she, you, the people who voiced her were particularly good at getting her character. I almost can't think of a season where DW's voice wasn't great. And there were some seasons I missed because there's 25 of them or something, but
right,
always great. And if you can get that voice in your head early on, you can write for the character so much better. So the voices are everything.
It's so wild to think about how the decisions people like Kathy made when they started developing the show became mainstays on the show for 25 years. Like when they cast the original voice actors, every time they had to recast, they were looking for someone who sounded like the person they originally chose for the part. In a way, it feels like a lot of pressure, because how are you supposed to know what voice is really right? Like, how do you know what DW sounds like? Here's Scott Kramer again.
I've always wondered, in the initial process when you're looking for somebody, so like say there's a new show, you're gonna make a pilot episode. Is there a lot of pressure on getting the cast right away, or is it more lenient in voice acting because it's easier to switch them out because you're not actually seeing a person's face? Because uh-huh. I would imagine that I think about it all the time when I see a pilot episode for a new show, and they like, they make the theme song and then they use the theme song for 10 years, you know? And I always think that's crazy that they got it right on the first try. They got it right away. So I wonder if it's the same for like animated shows or voice acting.
I asked Kathy about the theme song for Arthur, written of course by Bob Marley's son, Ziggy Marley.
I think that Ziggy Marley had come out with, you know, we were talking, I do remember being part of conversations about who to get. And I think theme songs are so important.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and often, I mean, a really good theme song, I'll watch a show just at least once if the theme song's really good. Whereas if it's not, I will turn it off. So it felt very important to get it right. But I honestly don't remember how Ziggy Marley came up, except that I think we wanted something that felt a little different.
I've always wondered what it would be like to talk to the kid who is currently playing the part of DW. When I brought that up to Kathy to talk about her current involvement with the production of Arthur, I learned some crushing news.
Well, Arthur is no longer in production. We had our wrap party 2 years ago.
What?
Yes.
But there's a, okay, hang on. Sorry, the reason why I'm surprised is because one of the first things I did was look up, is there a kid who's still playing DW? And there was a kid recently cast. I'm so surprised to hear this. This is devastating.
And I think they've made a mistake. And PBS, and I think, you know, I think Arthur should come back. And I know I'm not alone in thinking they made a mistake. I don't know. I don't pay attention that much to things like ratings.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if it was a ratings issue or if it just like felt like it needed to be retired. So to me, it just felt like an evergreen, like it was never going to end, but it did end. We finished the last episode, season 25. 2 years ago, there was a wrap party, all of that. However, PBS and I wrote a couple of the scripts, decided to do some PSAs on various issues like voting, like hand washing, pandemic related issues. And I used the Arthur characters. So they're still around. They're still, as far as I understand, not all the shows have aired. There's still a few yet to be aired, but they've all been produced.
Check this out.
Do you have your mask? You're gonna wear a mask, right?
Only sick people need masks, Francine.
If you're going out in public, you 100% need a mask.
I wanted to hear what Kathy thought about literature and TV shows for kids and why she thinks they are important.
I just think that the best literature and the best kids' television expands a child's humanity, empathy for others, and understanding of self. And so it has to tackle tough things, and it has to show reality. It can't be incessantly cheerful and chirpy. That is a disservice to children. I think children are endlessly interesting and curious about what they don't know. So when I get notes saying, don't do this because kids don't know what that means, I'm like, this is how they learn what this word means. It doesn't bother kids. It doesn't bother kids to not understand something. They go through life not understanding half of what they see. Why would we talk down to them? So the best kids television, and Arthur is absolutely at the apex of that particular genre, reflects children, expands a child's life, reflects a child's life, makes children of all shapes and sizes feel seen, feel, you know, that their bad feelings, their mad feelings, their hurt, their all of that is allowable. It shapes how you see the world, and it shapes how you see yourself in the world.
Returning to Scott, I mean, when you started on the platform, were you as set in terms of being funny? Like, was that a goal for you?
So it was always my goal to be, you know, the funny guy or whatever. And then I guess the older I got more comfortable in just being who I am, being myself. And I think being myself, I am kind of just naturally funny a lot of the time. So that comes off in my videos now, but I'm not like actively trying to be a comedian anymore. I'm just, I don't really know how to describe what I do. I'm not, because I wouldn't consider myself a comedian by any means. And I also wouldn't consider myself a reviewer or a reaction channel. So maybe I'm somewhere in the middle of those. Yeah, but it's just something that I kind of grew into. I didn't ever have a plan to do what I do now. It just kind of fell into place that way.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. For me, this show is that. I think, like, I've always, like, I took me a long time to realize that I enjoyed podcasting, because it took me a long time to realize, oh yeah, I enjoy talking to people, you know, where we don't have a pre-existing relationship, and let's get to know each other, and interviewing and learning about someone and what they're into. And so that took a long time. And then for years I was trying to think, okay, how can I make something of myself that is beyond this DW thing that happened? Can I make people, is there something, is some way that I can be creative where people will appreciate what my output more than what I was doing as you know, as DW? I think it can be tricky. And I wonder if for you, there's sort of a connection between that idea and maybe like a video going viral. Do you feel like a sense of competition with yourself to try to like outdo that video? And does that impact or change your creative process?
That's definitely how I felt for when this was first getting started, because growth was like the most important thing to me. I needed to get out of my job and I needed to be able to do this full time. So anytime something would do well, it's like, okay, let's get back on the ball. Let's do it again, baby. Let's get another viral video. And every few months I would get one that would do really well. But now I'm at a place where if I'm just consistently getting, you know, however many views I get every month, that is like, oh, that is so sweet to me. Cause it's like, I've built an audience. I feel like there's people that enjoy what I do. It's not just like, you know, hoping and praying that the YouTube algorithm throws me a bone every few months. I feel happier now getting, you know, maybe 250,000 views per video than I did getting a million views every 4 months, you know? So that's kind of where I am now. And the slow growth to me feels a little bit more like you have a little bit more personal connection with the audience then. Cause anytime a video pops off, there's all these new people coming in and they don't really know they don't get it. They don't get what's going on the channel. And then they have to get acclimated. And people do. People get comfortable and they get used to what you do. But there's a learning period there. That's why I like the slow growth is nice, because people coming in, they get all the inside jokes. They understand the content. They understand like what to expect. And that to me feels better than when videos go viral. But it is, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like a viral video isn't awesome. You know, every now
right,
and then it's
no,
cool.
Yeah. It's been a winding road, and I'm so glad I'm following through with this journey. I knew it would be the way for me to combine what I love doing, interviewing people and making podcasts, with my story. Except what I didn't realize was how much this project would help me look back and appreciate the experiences I've had in my life up until now. All of these things have helped me develop my perspective. I think they helped me find my voice. My adult voice. I'm glad I'm doing this podcast almost 15 years after my time as DW. I've had the chance to try different things, and I keep coming back to interview shows and podcasting. I'm still searching for the other guys who played DW, but I'm also looking forward to chasing this feeling, to continue finding my adult voice, and to use it to do something else. Maybe not something bigger than Arthur, but something meaningful.
I'm so happy that I didn't, like, that this YouTube success, I guess you could call it, I'm glad that it didn't come, like, immediately after high school for me. I'm glad that I went to college and I worked in an office, and I'm glad I did all that, because it really did teach me a lot about just, like, how to handle this, because this is a business in and of itself. And had I not done that, I might have, you know, given up a lot of control to managers, or like fallen into, I don't know, just I'm glad that it worked out the way that it did. I think the timing for me was perfect. I know a lot of people can handle it when they're young. A lot of people can't. And I don't think I would have been able to handle it when I was young.
I feel the exact same way. Like, that's why I'm really glad that I had this like big gap between you know, working, and now where I feel like kind of like I have a much better head on my shoulders. I get to learn like organizational skills and like administrative skills,
yeah,
you know, things that I didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was the voice of DW, did I peak? Will I ever do anything more meaningful or significant? I'm not sure, but I'll keep trying to find out. It's so humbling that anyone wants to listen to this story. This podcast is something I've wanted to do for years now, and I can't believe this is the end of episode 3. There's lots more to come, like an interview with the second guy who played DW, or one with this one person that I still can't believe actually happened. It's all coming up. Thanks for listening. This podcast was made possible in part from contributions through Patreon from listeners like you. Thank you, Blendy, Quinton Reviews, Sam Brodaddy, and Alex.
To stay safe, let's wash our hands. All we have to do is turn on the water, turn on the water. Wet your hands, wet your hands. Use the soap, scrub real hard and rinse. That's all it takes.
Give it your all.
When we wash our hands.
What are you waiting for?
We can do our part.
Yes.
Remember, you want to keep washing for at least 20 seconds. How long is 20 seconds? Well, sing along with me and you'll be done. Wash your hands.
Next time on Finding DW.
So my name is Oliver Granger, and I was the second person to play DW on Arthur. I had the part from seasons 4 to 6, from 1999 to 2001.